This is The Guardian.
Just a warning before we start. This episode touches on the issue of sexual assault. Information and support for anyone affected by rape or sexual abuse issues is available in Australia at 1-800-RESPECT, which is 1-800-737-732. We've also linked to this service on the Full Story page as well. I'm Laura Murphy-Oates, and this is The Full Story. 2021 is coming to a close, and this week we're recapping some of the year's biggest moments. In this episode, it's all about sport.
Four quarters of intense pressure to claim a slice of football immortality. It's the 2021 AFLW Grand Final. It's the Crows, the Lions, and away we go.
This is what it's all about. It's incredible. I felt great out here tonight to play in front of you guys. It's a real honour, a real privilege, and we're extremely grateful to be here.
While global sporting events have brought risk and controversy this year, they've also brought moments of inspiration.
It's a world record, Emily Seabom is off to her fourth Olympics as well.
And Australian sport has faced a series of reckonings.
The CFC Do Better report is an acknowledgement that our club, our game and our country have not always got it right. And for our part, we have always sought to do our best, but that hasn't always been good enough. And for that, we are sorry.
Today, sport's biggest moments in 2021. It's Wednesday, the 22nd of December. First, I'll get you both just to introduce yourselves and your names and your role.
My name's Mike Heitner. I'm Guardian Australia's sports editor.
My name's Emma Kemp and I'm Mike's sidekick. Otherwise known as the deputy editor.
Not my sidekick. That's terrible.
Okay, so Mike and Emma, every year is a big year in sport, but especially this year with a pandemic Olympics and just some really groundbreaking moments of triumph, but also some serious reckonings that have happened. Somehow you have managed to narrow this down to a few key moments in 2021. What is the first story that you'd like to delve into?
The first moment that we've chosen was a story that rocked Australian swimming to its very core. This story was about Maddie Groves.
So she's a butterfly. She's a two-time Commonwealth Games gold medalist in the freestyle relay, and she's really been around the swimming team for quite a long time, the good part of a decade. So, look, I'd say she's not of the Emma McKeon and Ariane Titmus ilk, but she's definitely, you know, a pretty big performer for our country.
She's won two silver medals at the Olympic Games in Rio 5 years ago and was aiming to reach her second Games at the national trials earlier this year.
What was it that rocked the swimming world?
So a few days out from when the trials were due to commence, she actually pulled out. She announced it on a social media post. So there was quite a bit of intrigue around that when she did so. It was during the evening on a Wednesday night. And then the following day, everybody who was wondering had those questions answered because her subsequent post, and I'll quote this, said, "It's to make them pervs quake in fear from the number of people supporting a statement that threatens their existence." And she went on and said, "Let this be a lesson to all misogynistic perverts in sport and their bootlickers. You can no longer exploit young women and girls, body shame, or medically gaslight them and then expect them to represent you so you can earn your annual bonus. Time's up."
What was your first reaction to this post, Emma?
I remember seeing her Instagram post and I remember feeling quite surprised about the timing, a little bit shocked about what she'd said, and then, of course, your brain goes further than that and you think, well, is there a culture problem in another sport? And also, what is this going to do to the swimming team so close to an Olympic Games?
Did we get any more details about those allegations beyond this Instagram post?
Maddie largely avoided the media after she made the post in June, and it wasn't actually until December when she spoke to ABC 7:30 that we heard more details about those allegations. There were a number of them.
"It almost felt like at times you were chastised for going through puberty."
For example, she spoke about the way weight was a focus for young female athletes.
and gaining weight and growing boobs and, you know, growing a bum and hips and things like that, that was sort of seen as you were, you know, failing at your commitment to swimming because you were gaining weight when you were just developing in a normal way.
And she also made a very serious allegation. She alleged that she was sexually molested as a teenager over a period of 5 years.
When I was underage, I was on multiple occasions, I was actually molested by an adult male. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not going to say who this person is, but they still, like, work in swimming and stuff.
The person wasn't named, and Maddie said she hadn't made a formal complaint regarding the allegations, either to Swimming Australia or to the police. In response, though, Swimming Australia said in a statement to the 7:30 program that, and I quote, the report was the first Swimming Australia had been made aware of this matter. These allegations have been referred directly to the Queensland Police in accordance with Queensland's legislative requirements.
What kind of impact has this had on the broader swimming community?
What Maddie's allegations did do was spark off huge scrutiny on the sport and actually prompt, according to Maddie herself, an outpouring of support for her as other swimmers came forward to her with similar stories.
I think in the Me Too era, it was one of those really big moments in sport. I mean, we've seen quite a lot of them in recent times, and it reignited a conversation around not just sexual assault and abuse, but other issues as well. For example, Maddie spoke about the issue of weight and body image in swimming, and I actually found it really interesting going back and looking at some other swimmers and what they've said on this. You know, reading Liesl Jones' autobiography, Body Lengths, and she talks about, you know, some of the alleged body shaming that she endured when she was a young teenager. On weigh-ins, and it was interesting that Kate and Bronte Campbell's brought out sort of an autobiography, sort of a coffee table book, but in it Kate mentioned that, you know, when she was younger, the women swimmers were encouraged to eat off smaller plates just to keep their portion sizes down, and that she said she was never formally diagnosed with an eating disorder, but she certainly had some form of disordered eating. So it's interesting. You just get these little snippets from everywhere. And of course, everyone tries to speculate and fill in the gaps and come to their own conclusions. But it's really difficult when we just don't know at this point.
Other than the Queensland Police investigation, what has Swimming Australia done in the wake of these allegations?
So Swimming Australia said it's appointed an independent panel of experts to investigate issues relating to women's and girls' experience in swimming. The panel's report and recommendations are expected early next year, and they've said that they're committed to improving the sport and making sure the environment is safe for all its participants.
Swimming Australia's president, Kieran Perkins, obviously had to get involved at some stage, but he was criticised heavily for his response, notably for including comments that he would defy, and I quote here, defy anyone to suggest there's a cultural issue in swimming at the moment. And he followed that with swimming's in a great place at the moment ahead of the Olympics. And he also said to suggest that there's some kind of deep endemic issue is miles away from the mark. And obviously this didn't land very well with Maddie Groves. And those comments were disappointing for her to hear from the president of her swimming association.
This wasn't the only explosive moment that uncovered some big structural issues in sport this year. I mean, we covered on the podcast earlier this year with Lorena Allam, our Indigenous Affairs editor, the Collingwood AFL Club releasing the Do Better report, which did find that they have a problem with structural racism. That report was triggered, obviously, by allegations of racism at the club by former player Heretia Lumumba. This led to what I would describe as one of the more memorable press conferences at the year. I assume you know what I'm talking about. Tell me about this press conference.
It was probably Eddie Maguire just shooting himself in the foot, which isn't the first time that Eddie Maguire has done this, let's be honest. But he basically got up in front of everybody. The Do Better report had just come out. It had just said that Collingwood has had systemic racism going on within its club, which Lumumba had already spoken to a number of times. Eddie Maguire gets up there, and in response to this report, he says,
"This is an historic and proud day for the Collingwood Football Club. It's a day of pride. I mean, this is where, you know, I think people have to get past, if we're going to get anywhere, we have to get past the idea of tearing down people, tearing down institutions who are prepared to look within themselves to make the hard decisions to make things different. We're not a mean-spirited club. We're not a racist club. We're a club that tries to do well, and we make mistakes. We're a big church. But what we want to do more than anything is to put arms around and take the heat out of this constant race debate.
Do you remember him saying that and your thoughts or reactions?
It was a truly jaw-dropping moment. Given the seriousness of the contents of this report, the seriousness of the claims of structural racism at the club, to almost within, you know, within the first 5 seconds of the press conference to explain what the contents of the report is, to say this is a historic and proud day for the club, really was so far off the mark, like just wildly far off the mark. You heard it in the newsroom as we were listening in. No one could quite believe what he'd said.
We make mistakes. We learn. We strive to be better. But in working to build this club into a position that it is today, to be able to make these announcements, we'll continue to do our best to be a leading light in our community.
He shot himself in the foot, not for the first time. But of course, as we've seen with Eddie Maguire in the past, that he has had pretty much, you know, free rein to say whatever he wants with no consequences.
I mean, most people in Australia would be familiar with some of Eddie Maguire's comments across his football commentating career. What stands out to you, Emma?
Well, he suggested in an interview that renowned Indigenous player Adam Goods would be a good person to promote the musical of King Kong. That was a pretty big one. That was going on 9 or 10 years ago now. He also spoke very poorly about Carolyn Wilson, who's a veteran AFL journalist, with a joke that implied he hoped she'd drowned at a charity event. He also, back in 2010, which I'd forgotten until very recently, when he was hosting the Winter Olympics, he made a homophobic slur about some male figure skaters, which I won't say on air, but basically the moral of the story is that he's done this over and over again, and he just still seems to be this untouchable force and this power that everyone is supposedly scared of. And for that reason, to be honest, like, I wasn't certain that he would be forced to stand down as Collingwood president. I actually thought that he would probably survive this. But what was interesting when you mentioned that it was jaw-dropping and everyone in the newsroom couldn't quite believe what he'd said, in part that also confirmed to me that the Do Better report had been right, because he just missed the mark so wildly. Those remarks to me just seemed to indicate a broader blindness to the issue of structural racism and how it works. And that shows to me that he could have overseen the club for the good part of 2 decades and not been alert to this issue. We should note, however, that Eddie Maguire has apologised for those comments. And when it comes to the Do Better report specifically, he did later apologise for stating it was, in quotes, a proud day for the club. And he said he got it wrong and that he did not intend to suggest pride at past incidents of racism, but rather at the work of the club to address that. So Maguire said the club was apologetic, humbled and galvanised to dismantle any structures of systemic racism at the organisation.
I really believe that this was a watershed moment for him and his career and for racism at the club and indeed in the AFL more widely and indeed in sport, probably because of the high-profile nature of Collingwood Football Club and the high-profile nature of its president. And given like the enormity of his gaffe, if we can call it that, I did have a feeling that this possibly could be it for him. And then, of course, the outrage was instant on the internet, but not only that, many high-profile figures, politicians, writers, academics, former sporting greats, everyone got onto it.
They all piled in.
In more recent times, you know, there has been a backlash against some of the comments we mentioned earlier made by Maguire, but I just had a feeling this time that given the huge backlash, given the importance of the actual Do Better report and the apparent dismissal of its contents immediately, I just felt that probably was going to be his time.
Mm.
And then, of course, we had the announcement that there would be a press conference in, you know, 20 or so minutes, which is what sporting clubs tend to do, give you very little notice. But for that 20 minutes, it was all just like prep a story to say he stood down, because at that point, we definitely knew that was going to happen.
Good afternoon, everyone. I try my best, and I don't always get it right, but I don't stop trying.
And so a week later, Maguire stood down.
Today, effective immediately, I step down from the presidency of the Collingwood Football Club.
In a tearful press conference, but there weren't many in the Guardian newsroom, at least, who were crying.
From the moment I became the president of the Collingwood Football Club on my 34th birthday back in 1998, my sole motivation was to heal, unite, inspire, and drive a new social conscience, not just into this club, but sport and the community in general.
Next, a pandemic Olympics and some of the most uplifting moments in sport of 2021. So, guys, it has been a really big year for Australian sporting success in general, but especially in tennis. I tuned into tennis for the first time in my life, actually, mostly due to the wonderful Ash Barty. But I'm wondering what you guys want to say about tennis. What were the key moments for you?
That was really heartwarming that you've taken up watching tennis.
Yeah. I mean, it is a pandemic. It was the Olympics, and it was just so calming, but also exciting and fun. It was a good way to engage with sport that didn't feel too stressful, I think, the tennis this year.
A good distraction, yeah. Obviously we had the Aussie Open at the beginning of the year, which we didn't think would happen, but we also had Wimbledon, which of course was won by the very Ash Barty you just mentioned, the world number one, the golden girl. Seriously, that she is one of those rare sports stars who you can't say a bad word about, because she is gracious in every single thing that she does. She's gracious when she loses, and she's just as gracious when she wins, which she was when she won the Wimbledon trophy. And in a beautiful sense of symmetry, she was playing with the same kind of scallops, the lace scallops on her dress that Yvonne Goolagong-Cawley played all these years ago.
As a deliberate tribute.
As a deliberate tribute to her, who she mentioned as one of her idols as well. And yeah, she also dedicated her win to her, which was really lovely.
And there was this amazing symmetry in Yvonne being her mentor, being this amazing Indigenous tennis star, and then Ash Barty there at Wimbledon, another Indigenous tennis great, claiming this trophy.
She's on her way to becoming a tennis great. She's not quite on the level of Yvonne at this point.
Oh.
I don't want to be controversial, because as Emma just said, you can't say a bad word about Ash Barty. But, she's won two Grand Slams so far. And she's well on her way, and she ended the year as the world number one for the third consecutive year, which only a handful of players have ever done before. So to class her as one of Australia's greatest athletes, current athletes, is not hyperbole at all. She's wonderful, and as Emma said, I think it's her attitude. She is graceful in victory, graceful in defeat. You know, she doesn't always win, but she takes those defeats on the chin. Tennis is a sport that it's not a stranger to, how can I put this, some fairly poor behaviour on court. But Ash, she doesn't go in for that at all. And I think that's why she resonates with the Australian public, and why she's been held up as such a fantastic role model. That, and of course, her incredible feats on the tennis court, which is replicated this year.
You've just jogged my memory, actually. I remember that at the Australian Open, when she was knocked out by Karolina Muchova, who had that controversial medical timeout, and in the press conference, journos really kept prodding Barty to say something about it, because she probably would have been within her rights to complain about it, you know, despite the fact that Muchova was technically within the rules. And yet still she just said, I should never have let myself get into a position where I could have lost my momentum. So she always sort of puts the onus back on herself.
Oh, I mean, I think when you look down the other end, you can see she was taking her time quite often. It was probably the first warmer day that we've had here for a while. But I tried not to focus on her too much. It's about going about it the right way for me and the way that I wanted to play the match. And I felt like I lost my way a little bit there in the second set, midway through, and kind of lost that momentum that I'd built.
But with all this chat of Ash Barty, I'd be remiss to not mention another of Australia's favourite current athletes, Dylan Alcott, who, much like Ash, has had a sensational year and really cemented his status as one of the all-time tennis greats, genuinely. This year, he completed what's known as a calendar Grand Slam, which is winning each of the four Grand Slam titles and the Paralympic or Olympic title in the same calendar year. He became the first man in the history of tennis to do that, and along the way, just continued to delight the audience with his... Dylan's a fun guy to watch on the tennis court. Mm. He doesn't just go out, he's not a machine. He doesn't go out there, do his job and leave. He entertains as well.
Mm. He is a kind of broadcaster and presenter
as well. He's got many strings
to
his, yeah. He's got many strings to his bow. You know, he's a radio DJ, but he does so much work off the tennis court as well in terms of advocacy. And you just have to be pleased to see him making such a success of his tennis and his other endeavours as well.
Without Tennis Australia, my life would be very, very different. And without you, to be honest, and the way that you've backed everything that I've done, even this, like, as I always say, my first Australian Open, there was four people there watching and three of them were my family. And now we've got a full press conference for an announcement today. And thanks, everyone, for coming.
Not only was it an amazing year for him, but we found out in November that the Australian Open in January is going to be his final tournament and he's going to bring an end to his decorated and glorious career.
He's just got such a self-deprecating sense of humour, doesn't he? Like, even that press conference that he called when he was going to retire, he says, oh, thanks for coming. I thought no one would come.
To be honest, I'm a bit shocked. And Craig, thank you for that, mate.
And then jokes that he's going to keep playing until 2032.
No, not really. So today I'm announcing that at the Australian Open in a couple of months will be my last tennis tournament.
And it just rolls off his tongue. It's quite natural.
It'll be the end at the Aussie Open, and I'm really excited about what it's going to be. There's heaps of cool stuff that's going to happen, and just forever grateful for the opportunity that I've had to do the thing that I love for so long. But the time's come.
Now, guys, we can't do a sporting wrap of 2021 without speaking about the biggest sporting event of the year, the Olympics. I don't really envy you. There's just too many moments from the Olympics to choose. But, you know, if you had to pick a couple, what stood out to you?
From 15 hours on the couch every single day for 2 weeks. Sure.
Simmer it down.
I'll just boil that right down.
Yes, please.
Look, there were so many. Obviously, there are heaps in the pool, which we'll mention. But Peter Boll was one big one for me on the track. I feel like he was just really electrifying and he really just took Australia with him on this journey. He made the men's 800-metre final, the first Australian man in 53 years to do so, which is quite something. We don't traditionally do very well in that event. He broke national records on his way. He actually did really well and just sort of on the final, even just 300 metres or so, he was overtaken and he didn't place on a podium, but still he just sort of took us along with him. And he was just a really lovely character as well. Mm. He was really just softly spoken, really endearing to the public. He represented a diverse Australia. He's Sudanese. He was born in Khartoum. His mother is Sudanese and his father from the region that is now South Sudan. Mm. And, you know, there are a lot of Sudanese athletes now in Australia in a number of different sports. And so he was really representative of that and, you know, a beautiful representation.
Mike, if you had to pick your fave.
You can't really look past the swimming team who absolutely knocked out of the park in Tokyo. After a very disappointing performance 5 years earlier in Rio, you know, the pressure was really on them to perform. There was the disruption of the Maddie Groves allegations that we talked about in the build-up, but it was a hugely successful games in the pool, led mostly by the women's team, with swimmers like Emma McKeon, Kayleigh McEwen and Ariane Titmus, all supremely talented, world-class swimmers who added to the medal tally, which by the end of it all stood at
Drum roll.
Bloody lost it. Where's it gone? Sorry.
That's right.
Sorry.
That's the most English I've heard.
I've just bloody lost it.
It's disappeared.
What was it in an article?
9 gold, 3 silver, 8 bronze.
9 gold, 3 silver, and 8 bronze.
Were there any other Olympic moments that stood out to either of you?
Ash Maloney. We've got to talk about Ash Maloney and Cedric Dubler.
Just in terms of an absolute specific moment, there was the incident in the decathlon.
Yeah, there was. And I'd like to say the moment was just that we had the first Australian stand on the podium in the decathlon, but it was actually in the minutes leading up to that moment. So we had two decathletes running in the final race, I suppose, of the 10 events, which is the 1500 metres. Cedric Dubler, who has been around, he competed in the Rio 2016 Olympics. He was ruled out of medal contention. So what he did in that final race was he paced his Australian teammate, Ash Maloney, throughout that race. So he ran with him the entire way. That's what it means to pace someone, to kind of keep them in check and keep them moving at the right speed so that they don't either expend too much energy or tell them when they need to go, when they need to kick.
Kind of running as a team effort.
Exactly, yeah. So they were running as a team and you could see Ash Maloney tiring towards the end or basically throughout that race, actually. It's such a grueling event, the decathlon. But Cedric Dubler just started screaming at him, go, go, fucking go, over and over again, and he did not let up. And he was so, so impassioned with this cheering him on that he basically screamed himself still and he stopped running. And then he just shouted at him as he crossed the line. And he basically had to get within nine or 10 seconds of the American guy who was ranked fourth to ensure that he'd got that bronze medal.
Mm.
And so as soon as they saw the times come up, they knew they'd done it. And it was just beautiful, to be honest. Like, I was almost crying. That was probably the moment in the Olympics I almost cried.
But also in any other situation in the world, intensely annoying to have somebody just screaming in your face without stopping. And then when you leave him behind, he's still shouting at you.
Shouting in love and support and encouragement. Is that it? Is that the wrap of Sport 2021?
If we've got time, I'd just like to maybe squeeze one final moment in. It was the Fijian rugby league team called the Silk Tails who were coming over to Australia to play in the Ron Massey Cup competition in Sydney. They were forced, like every other international sports team, to undergo a period of quarantine.
So they sung a pre-match hymn that they generally sing before their games, and they did that to thank the hotel quarantine staff.
Each person on their own individual balcony in a Sydney hotel in mascot, singing so beautifully, everyone pitch perfect. They produced one of the most beautiful moments in sport, for me at least. I cried.
Did you?
Yes, I did. I absolutely did. And I watched it again and I cried again.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing in love and respect for you. It's beautiful.
I can sort of understand why, because it's really uplifting. The way that they're all singing it, and also that so many people complain about hotel quarantine. They complain about all the nitty-gritty of it, you know, and some of it rightfully so, but this was just one of those really positive moments where people are, for want of a better word, and this is a bit of a cliche, but banding together and just supporting one another.
It was just a joyful moment in a year that was not quite so joyful.
That's it for today. Thanks to Mike Heitner and to Emma Camp for their time. You can find their work at theguardian.com, especially under the sport tab. And we have also linked some of their stories discussed in this episode on the full story page. This episode was produced by Ellen Lee Beater, sound design and mixing by Joe Koning. The executive producers of Full Story are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate, and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay, catch you tomorrow.